Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by LASIK Vision Centers, providers of laser vision correction. Information on laser vision correction at 1-888-529-2020.
It is 6 minutes now past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. 3 months down and 6 weeks to go. The Minnesota legislature, which has been meeting since January, is now getting down to the brass tacks of just how much money to spend and what to spend it on and how much to return in tax relief and in what form. Now, no final agreements are expected for several weeks, but the broad outlines of what is likely to occur are starting to emerge. Minnesotans will apparently get a tax rebate and a tax cut, and some areas that felt shortchanged by the governor, like education, will apparently get more money than the governor has proposed. But Minnesota House Republicans and Senate DFLers appear to be far apart on several key issues, and Governor Ventura, for his part, says he'll use his veto pen early and often this year if legislators stray too far from his priorities. Today we're going to try to get a better idea of just how these issues might finally get resolved by the time the legislature adjourns on May 21st. Joining us from our State Capitol Bureau are legislative leaders Steve Swigum, the Speaker of the Minnesota House, and Roger Moe, the Majority Leader in the Minnesota Senate. As always, we invite you to join our conversation. If you have a question or comment for Senator Moe or Speaker Swigum, give us a call here. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. An update from the legislature today. And again, a question, if you have one, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Senator Moe, Speaker Swigum, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Gary. Thanks for having us.
It's nice to be back.
Now, to use a weather term, as you folks look ahead to these coming negotiations on the big budget issues, what's the forecast here? Partly cloudy or partly sunny? Speaker Swigum?
Well, I would say it's partly sunny. Obviously, there are some differences that exist between the House and the governor, between the House and the Senate, the governor and the Senate. There's some differences on the total amount of the spending packages, total amount of the tax cuts, where the priorities are. But, Gary, the last 2 years, we've proved that we've been able to get together, to cooperate, to come forward with balanced product. And even though there are some great differences now, we're 7 weeks from the end of the session, and I have no reason to not believe, short of the governor's comments about veto a little bit too early, that we won't be able to do it again.
Senator Moe, would you agree? Partly sunny?
Well, we've got a lot of work to do. There's no doubt about that. From the Senate's perspective, we're working very hard now on the budget figures, and hopefully we'll set our targets by the middle of next week, just before we take a break, and obviously then see what the reaction is to that. Then after that, after the break, we will come back and try to get everything passed through the various budget committees to get into conference with the House. The Speaker's correct. We've been able to resolve our differences in the past, and sometimes those differences have been quite significant. And I guess we, at this stage of the game, you always have to be optimistic that in spite of what we see today in terms of what would be interpreted as probably some significant differences, I still think they can be resolved.
Mm-hmm. It does look, to an outsider, though, like you folks are moving along different, very different paths. On the one hand, in the Senate, more or less a third for tax cuts, two-thirds for spending. In the House, just the opposite, two-thirds tax cuts and a third for spending. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of early agreement here. Am I being too pessimistic?
Well, I'm not sure. Again, I haven't had a chance to go through all of the House's numbers. I can just simply tell you that the Senate will focus its attention on the tax reduction side, will focus on property tax relief. And on the expenditure side, we will focus on education, transportation, and the the healthcare area, particularly as it relates to those who work for our nursing homes and developmental disability centers, making sure that the employees there get some increase in their wages. So I think we're focusing on the priorities that we think are responsive to what people are telling us. Let me, if I might just back up from your comments there a little bit, Gary. I'm not sure if that's an accurate reflection of where the Senate's at. I think it would be somewhat misleading to talk about the expenditures that were agreed to in the previous biennium as, once we decided on the budget in 2 years ago, that establishes a floor. And what we've done is we've simply taken beyond the inflation, we've taken a look at, and let me just also qualify there, in some areas the governor did not have an inflationary increase, and what we did is we took and divided the growth in the out years in half and put additional resources into primarily education and the rest into tax cuts. So mm-hmm. I think we've tried to find the balance here.
Mm-hmm. I think from the House side, Gary, first of all, we're probably fairly closely aligned with the governor on his overall tax and spend parameters on the total amount of spending increase he is suggesting or recommending to the legislature, as well as tax cuts. We obviously have some differences of priorities, and that was evident last night in our Ways and Means Committee, where we have already set our targets. We set our targets last evening, and you saw in the actions of last evening Ways and Means Committee that there were a significant increase in the amount of dollars going towards education, towards higher education, towards our nursing homes in the state of Minnesota over what the governor had recommended. Now, our total parameters are very much aligned with the governor, and I guess a balance is all dependent upon where you're coming from and what numbers you want to use. I would contend that the House's numbers are very, very much in balance with each other. When you look at last biennium's base spending, if you take the base spending of last biennium, you add to that the forecasted amount, the discretionary spending that the House will be doing, that it almost exactly equals the tax cut that is being proposed by the House as well. $1.46 billion versus $1.5 billion, I would say that that's a exact balance in representing Minnesota needs.
Mm-hmm. Lots of interest in taxes, of course, and coming up immediately would be a possible tax rebate out of the legislature. How is that going to play out? Apparently, my understanding is that there's, at least in theory, about $850 million available for a possible rebate. When all is said and done, will Minnesotans likely get all of that, part of it, none of it? How will that be resolved?
Well, in the House, we've already passed the rebate off the floor and has sent it over to the Senate for their action. I believe it's $856 million is the number that was in the rebate. We're kind of holding true both to the words that we said that the surplus of this biennium ought to be returned back to the taxpayers, as well as keeping honor with the agreement that was made in the 1999 tax bill between House, Senate, and Governor that put in the automatic return language, automatic kicker that was put into the law that says, anything available at the end of the session, and when we got done the last session doing our taxing and spending, would be sent back to the taxpayers, and we plan to keep honor with that agreement.
Senator Moe?
Well, let me, a couple of points. First of all, the Senate feels that a substantial portion of those revenues are because of deferred maintenance, and so we have suggested that we meet the House and the governor halfway, use half of it for a rebate and half of it for transportation purposes. I think it's fairly clear that there are significant needs in transportation throughout the state, whether it's in road construction or bottlenecks or bridge construction or transit issues. Those are important to Minnesotans, and we're hearing more and more about that, and so we think that is a legitimate balance. As I said, meeting the House and the governor halfway in terms of half of it for rebate and half of it for transportation. I also want to say that I noticed the speaker makes reference to previous laws, and I'm not sure if the House is going to hold that consistent with some of the other agreements that were reached a couple of years ago, particularly in terms of the endowments.
Roger, we will keep the endowments as they are. We just think it might be better spent for other areas, such as healthcare-related issues like academic health centers.
But you are acknowledging that you're going to be changing the law, I mean, which is your legitimate right.
Right.
But we'll keep
the dollars there in the endowment to be used for healthcare aspects and programs.
We're speaking this hour with two key gentlemen at the Minnesota Legislature, Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, House Speaker Steve Swigum. They've joined us today to bring us up to date on what the legislature has been doing and what the future is going to hold here as the legislature moves into its final weeks. Adjournment date is May 21st, still a long ways to go, but some of the broad outlines of possible agreements and disagreements are now becoming clearer, and we thought it'd be great to catch up on what the legislature might do in these final weeks. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Governor Ventura has said that if you folks are going to increase education spending, either K-12 or higher education, which seems likely, that he wants to know, he wants some outcomes, some accountability standards attached to that increased spending. Is that going to be part of any legislation that actually passes this year?
Gary, this is Steve. From the House side, that certainly would be true. We are heeding the governor's words, and of course, would also ourselves like to put some accountability measures into the dollars that we do place into education, whether it be K-12, whether it be early education, or whether it be higher education, and those features are coming forward out of the House. The House has heard a number of them. Probably the most significant of which would be what we would term the balanced budget resources amendment, the one that would say that when school districts do come forward with their budgets, they have to be balanced 4 years out, kind of in the same way that we operate here within the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Senator Moe?
Again, as you know, over the past years, we've been working on trying to increase accountability and measurements within education, the testing issues, higher standards, and the like. And we're certainly open to any suggestion that the administration would make as it relates to even greater accountability. I don't think that's an issue. We obviously think that's important, and we'll be working with them to see if we can. I must confess I can't say that I know specifics that he has recommended, but we certainly would be open to whatever suggestions they might make.
One suggestion he had that's certainly attracted a lot of attention was to, as he put it, level the playing field a little bit, the negotiating field, to take away the teachers' right to strike. Is there any appetite at the Capitol for that, or is that idea never going to go anywhere?
I don't expect that to happen throughout the legislature in either body. I don't think that you're going to see us restrict that ability of individuals to make choices, the right to strike language. That probably won't pass the House nor in the Senate. I think the accountability features we were speaking to, Gary, the half dozen or so accountability features would be different than that in the House.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's right. I don't see that going anywhere.
Mark, your question for the legislative leaders, please.
Okay, thanks for taking the call. Speaker Swigum, I'm mainly interested in the commitment to transit. You talk about transportation and projects and dedicating part of the vehicle excise tax, but it's only for transportation projects, not transit. I guess I'd like to hear about that, and that's, of course, a little bit longer term. But short term, there doesn't seem to be investment in this next biennium in transit for the needs statewide as well as locally.
Well, Mark, I think we've dramatically over the past 2 years increased our commitment to transit. Honestly, not all of that has been the initiative of the House, but we certainly have agreed to it as part of the agreements towards the end of the budget sessions. It is also true, Mark, to be very honest, to say that within the House, and this is probably bipartisan within the House, there's a stronger feeling towards our roads and bridges and the need for roads and bridges. Transit being a very, very important part of the mix. It's certainly a part of the mix, but we feel very strongly that roads and bridges need attention as well.
Senator Moe, care to comment?
Well, transit has to be a part of whatever we agree on. I mean, that's a given, and that's basically how we have been able to pass transportation funding packages in the past. You have to strike the appropriate balance between making sure that we address rural transportation issues, which may be road and bridge construction, metropolitan bottleneck issues and bypass issues, as well as both rural and urban transit needs. So I think that you will see when the Senate passes its budget that we will have found that balance, because it is. It's fairly clear that you have to have alternatives for people rather than just driving here in this metropolitan area. I think it's fairly clear that the congestion is getting worse, and certainly transit buses relieve some of that. And so we will find that balance, and we hopefully will have an appropriate level of funding for transit.
When all is said and done, do you think there's going to be a big bump in transportation spending, be it for transit or for roads and bridges? Governor said at the beginning of the session he really didn't propose a whole lot this year because he had a big plan last year and you folks didn't pass it, so it's the ball is in your court, he said. When all is said and done, is there going to be a big chunk of money, extra money available for highway construction and for transit?
Well, I would point out the governor, apparently his memory isn't very long. The last session, the House and Senate agreed, and the governor signed $400 million plus of resources for additional road, bridge construction, transit needs, and the like. That's part of why we are proposing to do something similar this session. So, again, based upon where we're at now, I think there is an attempt. I think the Senate will come with a plan that tries to follow up with additional one-time resources. I mentioned that about the possible use of the rebate for part of that. We're also looking at a longer-term fix as well that tries to guarantee a certain level of funding, both in terms of the transportation fund as well as in transit.
Gary, when you asked the question, both Roger and I had a smile a little bit to each other in regards to Governor Ventura, and I understand in this game we all try to take credit for things we want to and not take the blame for the things maybe we ought to take blame for. I understand that's part of politics, but the way you phrased it, the governor having proposed or brought forward a big transportation package last year, seems to me it was the initiative of the House and Senate, and we kind of had to bring the governor along a little bit, but that be as it may, that was one-time spending, and that was important to put that influx of one-time spending into bottlenecks that exist within the metropolitan area. Certainly transit was part of it, and the interregional corridors in outstate Minnesota, which are so important. But we've found out now, I've talked to the Commissioner of Transportation, that they cannot spend in the next 3 years, cannot spend any more one-time monies. They cannot get it programmed, get right-of-way purchased. There's no more one-time monies that can be spent for the next 3 years. So it seems to me that the direction to go now would be to try to find some permanent increase in the Highway User Distribution Fund. And that permanent increase, we will be looking at the House of having a constitutional amendment, the MVET transfer, to transfer a significant part of that to the from the general fund to the Highway User Distribution Fund, again, for permanent increase in funding for our transportation system.
Cheryl, your question, please.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Senator Moen, Swigum, and Gary. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm the president of Legal Assistance of Washington County, and last year the Washington County Board decided not to fund us because they said that we were not a core function. And as you know, we serve low-income people with their legal needs. And I'm wondering, considering the needs of the people, like a new criminal justice system computer and low-income housing and K-12 education, all the other needs, how is it that this bill for a new stadium for Red McCombs and Carl Pollad, who Carl Pollad, at least, by Forbes magazine, is a billionaire, $1.7 to $1.8 billion, how can that be put before the needs of the people?
Okay, I guess two questions there. Number one, why are you folks even talking about new stadiums? And then the second question, broader question, would be, when all is said and done, is there going to be any meaningful stadium legislation passed by the legislature this session? Gentlemen?
Well, first of all, just for Cheryl's benefit, as well as the rest of the listeners, I think all of us agree that the priorities this session are tax relief and then focusing what resources we can on education at all levels, as well as certain health issues and transportation issues. They are the priorities, and they will remain the priorities, and nothing in the area of ball stadiums and the like will deter or detract from that. Also, the discussion about the loans in relationship to the ballpark, that is not a situation where if you do that, then you don't do something in education. That is not the case. One does not detract from the other in terms of the resources. But I can assure you, I think, Cheryl, I think our priorities are the same as yours, and we're working on them. As it specifically relates to legal assistance, I do know that I've had a couple of discussions with folks here who have made a pitch for that. I apologize. Within the budget, the budget areas, as to how they're looking at that, I'm sorry, I cannot address that without having somebody here who's a little more knowledgeable in that area.
Speaker Swiggum?
Well, Cheryl, also, like the majority leader, I don't know all the specifics of a specific number, but both legal aid and the public defenders, the money necessary for public defenders in the state, I've had conversations, I know, with our chairs of the Judiciary Committee, as well as persons who have the interest of representing that at the Capitol regarding those needs. And I believe I can say that in the governor's budget, there was some recognition of that, and hopefully that will follow through within the House and Senate. When it comes to the question of the ball stadiums, obviously there's we're not going to let that issue dominate the session, and I think we've done a pretty good job of managing that so it doesn't dominate the legislative session. There's another radio station in the city here, not yours, Gary, that we're speaking on, but another one where some of the sports casters don't speak very favorably of myself because I have not been as promoting and supporting of public subsidies and public taxpayer dollars for stadiums as they think I ought to be. And I've taken a few criticisms from the other side, so I think that my priorities anyway will be right, that we take care of the things government ought be about: roads, bridges, public safety, education, and subsidy for ballparks and professional sports. You get a pretty thin ice, I think, when you start talking about that as being a need.
Do you agree with Speaker Swiggum? Do you agree with the governor that any kind of interest-free loan does, in fact, constitute public money, and therefore automatically rule it out?
It certainly does meet the test of public dollars. I mean, there is some subsidy that's involved in interest-free loan. We have options that are available. Now, those are not options that necessarily the Twins and the Vikings like. I do understand that. But we have options that are available to give them some opportunities to exist. Gary, to answer to you directly, yes, I think that that's a public subsidy.
We're speaking this hour with Minnesota legislative leaders, Steve Swiggum. He is the Republican Speaker of the Minnesota House, and DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moell. Catching up on where the legislature is on some of the key issues, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, and we'll get to more of your questions here in a couple of minutes.
I'm Juan Williams. In the 4 years since Dolly the clone sheep was born, scientists have cloned cows, pigs, and even mice. Recently, two scientists said they now intend to clone a human being. Join Ira Flatow on the next Science Friday as the talk turns to human cloning. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins at 1 o'clock here on Minnesota Public Radio. Minnesota Public Radio is made possible by the generous financial support of listeners like you, and we really thank you for your support. News headlines now. Here's Stephen John. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. 1-2 combination has stocks sliding on Wall Street. The market's big comeback ended today upon a weak economic report and poor earnings warnings. The Labor Department says the unemployment rate rose to 4.3% last month, the highest level in 20 months. There's word of progress in talks with China over a detained U.S. surveillance plane and its 24 crew members. Secretary of State Powell says there's been movement and that he's encouraged. Powell also says U.S. diplomats are making arrangements to see the crew on a regular basis. Lie detector tests at the FBI are going straight to the top. As part of beefed-up security, Director Louis Free and his senior deputies will take the tests. The new policy follows the arrest of veteran agent Robert Hansen on charges of spying for Russia for 15 years. Minnesota congressmen spoke out in committee yesterday against federal dairy policy. Representative Gil Gutnecht and Representative Mark Kennedy oppose the policy that guarantees farmers in the South and East higher prices than producers in Minnesota and Wisconsin. The Hastings Middle School has been evacuated and sealed off after several students and teachers fainted this morning. The faintings started on the third floor and spread. A total of 30 students and three teachers have been taken to the hospital. There was no immediate word on their conditions or the cause. Authorities in Olivia were waiting for a state patrol helicopter to join the search today for two children who may have fallen into a water-filled ditch. The two boys are cousins, ages 5 and 8, and were last seen playing outside around 5:30 p.m. yesterday. Forecast is for cloudy, foggy conditions today. Showers and thunderstorms developing in the far south. A chance of showers in the central this afternoon. Highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. A windy night tonight with rain and thunderstorms. And Saturday, strong winds and more rain showers. In the Twin Cities, 44 degrees this hour. It's 36 in Duluth and 39 in Albert Lea. That's a news update, Gary, from Minnesota Public Radio.
Thanks, Stephen. It's 27 minutes before noon. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and our guests this hour, Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe and House Speaker Steve Swigum. They've joined us from our bureau at the state capitol to bring us up to date on some of the big issues that the legislature is working on. Adjournment date is May 21st, which is more or less about 6 weeks from now. And lots of big issues to resolve, the major tax and spending questions, of course, and lots of policy issues as well. Let's get back to our callers here. Linda's on the line. Your question, Linda?
Yes. In the listing of priorities for the legislature, I did not hear affordable housing, and I would like to hear from your two guests what's in the works for reducing the crisis we have in affordable housing.
Okay. Senator Moe?
Thank you. I was remiss in mentioning that. That certainly is a very important issue, and I think both of us have been spending a lot of time on that. We certainly have. I know the Speaker and I have been to a lot of meetings together with a number of groups. I think there's three different areas that the Senate has been looking at in terms of affordable housing, inclusionary housing, whatever you want to, what phrase you want to use. Certainly in terms of the tax code, I think we will be looking at trying to bring down the rental property tax rate. That has, it may have some impact, so that's one area. Secondly is looking at the communities that seem to have the kind of de facto restrictions or de facto zoning that don't allow for inclusionary housing in those communities, and we're looking at something in that area to see if we can get communities to be more inclusive in the different kinds of housing. And then finally, and probably the most important part of it, is the necessary resources. We hope to be able to go above and beyond the governor's recommendation for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. There are a number of different programs. I won't even attempt to try to address each and every one of them, but there in varying ways designed to address different populations that need housing where the market doesn't work for them. And so we're trying to respond. And let me say that I think the business community and the religious community and others have put a great deal of pressure on the legislature in this area, and I think rightfully so. I think it is a very important issue in practically any and all areas of the state.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes, Gary and Linda, the affordable housing question, or I guess it's now been termed the workforce housing question, the term's been changed a little bit. Certainly is, we're well aware of the problem within the house and the need that exists. The gap that exists between individuals who maybe many of them working full time not being able to obtain housing that's adequate and appropriate. Within the house, we don't have a specific number yet that we're attaching to the workforce housing issue, but it will be before Chairman McElroy's committee. And Mr. McElroy, of course, is a very intelligent, creative individual that will be able to come up with a number of, I think, good support programs that will be necessary from just the direct support that's necessary for the workforce housing question. But we also, I think, will be putting a lot more effort on the first thing that the majority leader mentioned, and that be the market response, the tax response, the tax reduction need. When you look at the housing needs within the state, and that rental housing pays such enormous rates compared to the rest of us who have our own home, the rates being I think the rental housing rate is 2.4%, the property tax rate substantial high rate. We're going to look at substantially reducing that rate, and hopefully also, besides addressing the short-term need and Representative McElroy's committee, hoping that that also there will be an increase in the availability, in the building, in the creation of new housing, because the market and the tax will allow it to take place, which it just simply does not allow right now.
Overall, is the governor's plan to dramatically change the property tax system, part and parcel of that being the state takeover of school funding, the formula funding and the rest, and as a trade-off, the broadening of the sales tax, is that idea dead?
No, I wouldn't. I sure wouldn't say it was dead, Gary. I think that in the House, there's a number that have concerns about taking over the cost of education and what it means for local control, and would it be state takeover of a Department of Education running our local schools. If individuals are able to overcome that and see that the levy is mandated by the state, and we're just talking about the paying of a levy that's mandated and it really doesn't have much to do with decisions of local schools, I think it's probably pretty alive. And the one provision of the governor's bold reforms that certainly is very questionable in the House would be the extenders, the extension of sales tax upon services and upon labor. I think that the House has pretty well taken a position that we will not be doing the extenders. We don't think that raising taxes on services and labor is necessarily a good thing to do, especially when we have a budget surplus of which we're dealing with.
But you can have one without having the other?
Oh, you can have one without having the other for sure. Of course, it changes the mix of what the tax cuts are that can be done. You know, the governor has recommended, Gary, a significant income tax, a significant property tax, reduction in the sales tax from 6.5% to 6%, significant second round of car license tab reductions. You cannot have all that buffet of tax cuts without doing the extenders.
Senator Moe?
No, everything that the governor has proposed is alive in the Senate. Like the speaker, I think I'd have to say that certainly pieces, and at least at a minimum, pieces are problematic and controversial. But I think we share the same goals, and that is that we should not only have tax reduction, but also some reforms in these areas, both in terms of the sales tax and the property tax area. Again, all I can say is that we're looking at all of it. We haven't made a decision whether or not we can go all the way on the state picking up the local levy, but certainly that's very much in play. We'd like to try to be able to do it. The only thing we would want to make sure of is that the tax relief, the property tax relief, is fair. And it cannot focus just on any one classification at the expense of others. We would want to make sure that all property classifications see some benefit of these tax reductions.
Steve, your question, please.
Senator Moe and Representative Swigum, thanks for taking your time to come here and listen to my question. I've studied the education issues, and I've been out in the legislature, and one thing I want to say is I know you guys work really hard, and I really want to compliment you guys for that. Another group that really works hard are the teachers, and I just have the most respect for teachers and the significant job they do. And I'd like to ask you what you do as leaders to increase respect for teachers by providing enough funds to compensate them fairly, which I really don't think they are at this point, and take some of the surplus, which actually I think we have a surplus because we haven't funded education adequately in the past decade or so, and I think we should take some of those funds, and you talk about give the surplus back, and I think we should give it back to education where it belongs, where we took it from. And so what are you guys doing directly to encourage to increase the level of respect for teachers and the job they're doing?
All right. Who wants to go first?
This is Steve, the speaker, Steve, and thank you for your question and for the kind and encouraging words, too. I realize that when you're making decisions, you're not always going to please somebody all the time, and Roger and I both get put in that position, as well as the rest of our colleagues, and it's nice to be recognized, the effort, if not the result, sometimes. Steve, I think, first of all, sometimes the rhetoric that gets a little harsh should not be used in regards to respect of teachers or any other occupation, by the way. And when you start, I think the governor has used the word black hole and things of that nature. That's not very respectful in itself. I begin by showing respect for teachers by respecting and loving my wife, who is a teacher. My wife teaches at Cannon Falls, Minnesota, and she's a civics government teacher. All my friends are teachers, so the respect becomes there. But then also I think there's the recognition of the importance of the occupation. Certainly some of it has to do with resources, Steve. And you're seeing within the House targets a significant increase over what Governor Ventura, anyway, has recommended in his budgets for education, K-12 and higher education. But it's also more than resources. I mean, resources are important, and they're probably a big part of the answer, but there's other things that are important parts of the answers as well, including their professional developments.
Senator Bell?
Well, I can appreciate how teachers feel. If you reflect on it, it's been about 15, 20 years of rhetoric that has really downgraded and downplayed the significant role that public education has played in this state and in this nation. It really has been the foundation of this country, and it has helped certainly in this state to bring us to where we are today, and that ought to be acknowledged. I hope, unfortunately, there are some people who have held prominent positions that use rhetoric that does not point that out, and I think we ought to do more of that. I certainly we will do what we can in terms of the resources. Not sure if we'll ever be able to meet the expectations either on both the tax cut side as well as on the expenditure side this session, but we will do what we can. There are other factors, obviously, making sure that there's decent pensions for people who will pursue the profession, and making sure that there's decent benefits aside from the direct compensation. And then also to make sure that there's professional development and to encourage people to pursue teaching as a career. I know whenever I speak to a group of young people who are high school seniors that visit the Capitol, I certainly do my part to encourage them to pursue a career in public education, because I just have to believe that unless we continue to get the best and the brightest to go into education, we're not going to have a strong system.
Governor Ventura apparently said on his radio program this morning that he predicts that you folks, Democrats and Republicans, will end up getting in a bidding war to see who can spend the most on education, curry favor with the voters. True?
Well, I don't. The governor certainly can have his opinion on it. I would guess that eventually the House and Senate conferees will reach an agreement on what is an appropriate level to put into public education with the appropriate kind of accountability measures to go along with it. I think that our reaction to that will be in direct response to what the public is telling us. As I look at it and take a look at starting salaries, I don't think those are out of line. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of surprised in many cases why people go into public education looking at the starting salaries. And in many of the districts that I represent, if I can be parochial for a minute, they're declining enrollment. They face, different unique circumstances that I think where resources are important. So the governor can phrase it the way he wants to. I think the speaker and I, we will try to reach an agreement on what is an appropriate level of investment in public education and hopefully make sure that we can continue to move forward in this area.
Speaker Swigum?
Well, Gary, we both try to bring the appropriate balance forward from what we've heard and what the different philosophies are that we might have. The interesting thing is both Senator Moe, the majority leader, and myself happen to be former teachers. We just took a little different paths after we left education. Gary, the bidding war word probably is something that if it were only a bidding war, I probably should not be in it because from what we want to do and what balance we want to bring forward, we know that we would lose if it's only a bidding war. First of all, we came forward with our targets last evening. We haven't seen the Senate targets, so if it's a bidding war, I'm not sure that you want to be first out of the blocks because we have already set our target, and we fully expect that the Senate targets will be substantially larger. We understand that. On the other hand, we want to look very strongly at the other balance that's needed in society, too, and that be the property tax reductions, the sick tax elimination, provider tax elimination, the support for roads and bridges that we think are very important, too.
Mark, your question, please.
It's kind of a comment and a question. My wife is a teacher, too, and I know since the profiles of learning and that stuff came out, she's been really frustrated, and it kind of ties in with your talks about education, too, and more funding. I don't know that it's necessarily more funding that's needed. It seems to me like in education or medicine or healthcare or whatever it is, the thing that's driven up cost is all the government demands, new programs, regulations. Now, like with the profile of learning, our school district had to hire a person just to make sure that all the profiles were implemented. And it seems to me that it's kind of almost like blackmail. You have to. In order to get the money, you have to do these programs and implement them and do them just right. And there's so much more for administrative costs that come with it.
Okay.
It just seems to me, wouldn't it be a lot more simple to get rid of some of those things and just let the teachers teach? I mean, wouldn't that honor the teachers by letting them teach instead of telling them out?
Okay. Well, specifically, gentlemen, do you expect that the profile of learning will live to fight another day, or will it be scrapped this year?
It will not be scrapped in the Senate. I know that. I think faculty members, parents, and the like across the state have worked many years to try to increase the standards in this state and also to build in certain accountability factors. And I realize the transition time, which is what we're in now, has been disruptive. It's been difficult. But I think once we've transitioned through this process, I think it will become very routine and we'll not hear as much about it. So I don't see us changing the profiles. We made some amendments here, I think, last year or the year before, which we felt gave districts more local options, more local flexibility. And I think everybody kind of wants this thing to be left alone for a while. I don't disagree with Mark in that schools have been asked to do more, and primarily because they've been one of the more reliable institutions in our society. And so, yes, because of that, because that has been an institution that's very prominent in young people's lives and you're mandated to go to school up to a certain age, we have asked schools to do more and more. There's no question about that, and certainly have kind of gone beyond maybe the old, the traditional academic areas. But I think, and I realize that may add burdens to school districts, but it also, indirectly, I hope you view this as a compliment, because we feel that schools are one of the real stable institutions, and particularly in children's lives.
Speaker Swigum?
Well, Gary, I certainly appreciate Mark's question, because it begs the response that it's more than just resources. We need to talk about mandates. We need to talk about what we have placed upon our schools as far as burdens from state or from departments as children, family, and learning as well. And the profile be one of those very, very key issues. There is a difference between the House and the Senate on this. It was very evident last year. We did end up with, as Roger said, an agreement, but basically it was a process agreement. It wasn't a change of the profile. It wasn't a change of the mandate, the burdensome paperwork. It was a process agreement that allowed school districts some choices to how many of the standards and whether they'd have the performance packages mandated by the state or not, and then how they would move towards implementation of all 24 standards. So basically it was just process reform. The profile reform or repeal is alive and well in the House, and it ought be. Just last fall we had a nationally recognized ACHIEVE group make recommendations and assessments of the profile that exists in Minnesota, and they made some very, very strong comments regarding the profile and how it ought to be changed. And I think you're going to see the House come forward with our omnibus education bill addressing the profile again, and certainly I think that ought to be both from the standpoint of what I've heard from parents, what I've heard from teachers themselves, and following just the recommendations and the criticisms that the ACHIEVE report brought forward to us last fall.
Gentlemen, unfortunately, we've got a lot of territory to cover and we're out of time, but just a quick comment. Is there any possibility that we would end up needing a special session to resolve some of the knottier questions? Speaker Swigum?
Not at this time. We're 7 weeks. We're in the process the way we ought to be. Our timeline is being run. Our deadlines, committee deadlines, are being run, and budget resolutions at the time frame that we've laid out. Gary, I'm not talking any special sessions at all. All right. You start mentioning the word, you might end up finding it to be a reality.
Speaker, our Senator Moll?
No, we've got a lot of work to do. We've got the budget to hammer out. We've got redistricting to work on and to agree on, plus many, many other issues. But our goal is to get it done by May 21st. I doubt whether or not we'll get done before that, but we certainly want to get done by then. No question about it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you, Gary.
Minnesota legislative leaders Steve Swigum and Roger Moe joining us from our State Capitol Bureau. Bring us up to date on some of the big issues facing the Minnesota legislature. 6 weeks to go. Adjournment date is May 21st. It's 6 minutes now before 12.
The Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 6th of April, 2001. It's the birthday of Merle Haggard, born in Bakersfield, California, 1937, who started writing songs when he was a prisoner at San Quentin. It's the birthday of geneticist James D. Watson, born in Chicago, 1928, who, along with Francis Crick and Maurice Wilkins, received the Nobel Prize in 1962 for the discovery of the molecular structure of DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, the substance at the basis of heredity. He later wrote The Double Helix, an informal account of the DNA discovery. It was on this day in 1896 the Olympic Games were resumed in Athens, based on the model of the ancient Greek counterpart, which had been discontinued in 393 A.D. 8 countries were represented: Denmark, England, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Switzerland, and the United States. It was on this day in 1862, the first day's fighting at the Battle of Shiloh in the Civil War ended inconclusively. But the next day, the Union forces of General U.S. Grant were reinforced, and the Confederate General Beauregard ordered a retreat, leaving Federal troops in a stronger position in Tennessee. It was on this day in 1830, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was founded in a log cabin in Fayette, New York, by Joseph Smith, Jr. And it's the birthday of the Shoshone woman, Sacajawea, born in Idaho in 1786, who served as interpreter for Lewis and Clark's expedition of 1804. She spoke half a dozen Indian languages. She also knew about edible plants, served as camp cook and housekeeper and peacemaker with the tribes they met along the way. Here's a poem by Thomas A. Clarke, Some Details of Hebridean House Construction. The walls are built with unmortared boulders, the external faces having an inward slope, the corners rounded. Roofs are thatched with straw, ferns, or heather, and weighted with stones hung from heather ropes. Instead of overhanging, the roof is set back on a broad wall top, which in the course of time becomes mantled with grass and verdure, which may provide occasional browsing for a sheep or goat. Back to the wind, face to the sun, is the general orientation. The floor is of beaten earth, and the main room is reached by way of the byre. There are no windows, and the frugal flame of the peat gives the only illumination. Smoke wanders and finds egress by a hole in the roof. In the outer aisles, the floor is covered with white sand from the macher. A few steps ascend the wall near the door to enable the roof to be thatched or roped, or the family to sit in the summer weather and sew, chat, or knit. By the peat store near to the doorway is placed a large stone for the wanderer to sit on. A poem by Thomas A. Clarke, Some Details of Hebridean House Construction, from Tormental and Bleached Bones, published by Edinburgh University Press. Used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
Right after we break here for station identification, we have a new documentary. This one will take us to Jerusalem, the center of so much of the Israeli-Palestinian dispute.
Coming up on Sound Money this week, we talk with venture capitalist Leslie Fracon about funding women-oriented businesses. This is Chris Farrell inviting you to join us for Sound Money Saturday morning at 10, again Sunday afternoon at 5 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. Cloudy sky, 44 degrees at KNOW-FM 91.1, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Cloudy through the afternoon, maybe an afternoon shower with a high reaching the upper 40s. Tonight, rain, maybe some thunderstorms, possibly some hail. Temperatures will rise through the night, and more rain possible tomorrow.